Hello, folks, and welcome to How To with Dean Clifford. I'm this week's host, Chance George. As Tony is away this week, I will be joined momentarily by Dean. We're just waiting his call. So this week, Dean will be getting into commerce versus common law. It's the third day of December, 2012. You'll be able to send your questions directly into askdean@globalfact.com. Let's make sure that's the right one. Nope. Okay, sorry, folks. askdean@globalfact2012.com. If you send your question in there, I'll definitely be able to see it. And if you ask in the chat room, I'll be glancing at it and trying to monitor it, but as people log in, it goes, it scrolls up pretty quickly. So if you want me to see it for sure, send it to askdean@globalfact2012.com, and that'll be how we get the questions. There's already tons of them in from last week because we had no show last week, so there's lots already in the queue, and lots more from this week, and there's numerous people logged in, and I'm just awaiting Dean's call. I'll try and call him again. It goes right to the back room, so if he picks up, I'm going to cut out for 1 second, so I'll just dial him again. Kind of need the star of our show, Dean Clifford, on the Dean Clifford Show. Well, a couple other programming notes while I run the studio at the same time is on the Conscious Living Show, Foster and Kimberly Gamble will be coming on, the makers of the movie Thrive. That should be a pretty big show. Hold on, I think I got Dean here. Got just a little technical difficulty in the studio trying to get him on the line, so he'll be with us momentarily. But like I was saying, Conscious Living Show coming up December 16th on Global Facts, the same page you're on right now, so you hit the follow button. You should be able to get emails and notifications when it's coming. Although I hear that there's a big sign-up process, so we'll be looking into how to make that easier. Next week on How To, as soon as we get Dean on the line, we'll get his topic right away. That way we can have questions set up for him again and another page made up. And I noticed the chat room. Yeah, I'm in Canada, too. I'm out in Ontario. Not 100% sure where Dean is, what province, but hopefully he's seeing the numerous calls and getting back to us right away. So once again, if you send your questions in to askdean@globalfact2012.com, that'll be the surefire way to get in, or you can call our line at 646-478-5728. That's another way to get on and on the air. I know that normally what they do is the second hour will be all of the comments, questions, and all of that. We'll have Dean for the first hour to kind of intro what's coming up, and then we'll get into all the questions. I'm not really sure I have a whole lot more to go over, so I'm going to quickly blog over to the other room and try calling Dean again. I can find a little song or something here. Tony's always got a bunch of songs queued up in here. All right, folks, I'm back. Still numerous calls in trying to make Dean pick up, so not 100% sure. I saw one person in the chat room mention that I should just put the number up and everybody could try calling. I don't know if that's going to work. I think I might get in a little bit of trouble here, but I'm going to give it a couple minutes if I can actually figure out how to call them live on air. That's kind of more putting them on the spot, I guess. So let me scroll through some options here and see if I can call him and everyone can hear it instead of me being in the back room here. Gives it a little bit of dead radio. Go figure on the week that I'm hosting. No Dean so far, but if anyone is a Global Fact listener, I host the Wednesday show, Truth Talk. It's a couple of We Are Change guys who basically bring up new topics every week and dive into different angles of the conspiracy world. And Conscious Living. Tony has a lot of huge guests on. Like I said, Foster and Kimberly Gamble from the Thrive Movement, they're coming on. And then, of course, we got the Monday show with Dean Clifford. As soon as he answers his phone. All right, I think I figured out how to call him live on air without having to go silent, so we'll try that again. Hopefully we wake him up. Can you guys hear that ringing there in the chat room? All right, yeah, that was me calling, and it rang, and I'm not getting him. I don't know what to do there, folks. I'm definitely going to give him a little bit more time, but somebody else call him. Skype in. If you hit the Skype button right above the actual call-in, you can call in for free. I guess this is a pretty good time to get your questions in. 646-478-5728. That's for all them rich folks out there. I use the Skype button. It's free. Lets you call in. I tried using the actual call-in number. Wow. What a bill that was. Here in Canada, calling America all day. Open it, reclose it. I've been doing it. Oh, man. Hang in there. I'm trying, dude. Literally put on the spot. Tony gives me the mission of taking over for Global Fact for a couple weeks while he's on holidays, and I got the opportunity to do the Dean Clifford show twice, and last week we didn't have a show, and this week I can't find him. So, Well, somebody call in. You'll get on air, I'm telling you that. I don't have any more songs to play here in the queue. Normally, Tony's got some Beatles queued up here. We would have played a whole song for you. Let's talk about UFOs. All right. Who believes in them? I totally believe in UFOs. If anyone's ever seen the Disclosure Project. Oh, geez. 1 second, folks. I'm back on air. That was Dean Clifford calling in. So the star of the show... Dean, how's it going?
Ooh, I get a drum roll. It's amazing.
Yeah. We're excited to hear from you. I was a little worried there. I thought it was going to be the Chance George show tonight.
No, I missed the last one there. I was stuck in the Calgary airport all night. I actually didn't get home till 2 in the morning.
I thought I just had terrible luck. I was like...
Yeah, no kidding, eh?
In a row.
Jeez, no, and then tonight, I left in plenty of time there, but we've had freezing rain, and it was blowing so bad on the highway the whole way home, I couldn't really drive over 60K, so I missed my mark by about 10 minutes getting home.
What province are you in there, Dean?
Manitoba.
Oh, yeah, there's some winter up there.
It's been an interesting one so far for being, December 2nd already today? It's our 3rd, it's been nothing but snow, it's supposed to be down to minus 20s most of the week here, it's, good times.
Yeah, I'm Southern Ontario, so we haven't really got much of anything yet, but I'm sure it should be coming anytime soon. But, yeah, Manitoba, whoa, Burr, that's cold, buddy.
Oh, I love it. You get used to it after a couple of years.
All right, so this week you're doing the commerce versus common law. Do you have a topic for next week? I'm supposed to ask you right away, Tony says.
Man, I probably will maybe by the end of the show. I think I'm going to leave it at waiting to see maybe where people are at still here. There still seems to be an awful lot of confusion out there that I've been trying to help straighten out all week here. I've been on some chat rooms on Skype again, which I have not been on pretty much exclusively for the last 3 months or so, just getting back into it, trying to correct, I think, where a lot of people are kind of going wrong with a lot of the stuff they're doing right now. So.
Well, that's definitely some questions where I would like to ask you and anything like that, because I got into the whole truther movement and I was trying to figure this all out from my own, and you get reading different books and then all of a sudden you get on the internet and, oh, if you follow that guy, you're going to jail. And then, well, did I just spend all this time learning the wrong way and then you get onto this show and you start hearing how you're explaining it, and you're like, all right, I'm starting to think that there's a lot of different methods to how this is supposed to be taken, and it's not just what people have put onto YouTube, folks.
No, yeah, it seems like everybody's got an opinion these days out there. And, well, geez, I don't know. It's been growing in a lot of directions. I think we were speaking 2 weeks ago there, 2 weeks ago with Tony there, that I think one of the newest methods that had come around was a new belief that all people have to do is waive the right to be recognized as the legal person, and it's going to start granting them all sorts of immunity in the courts. And that's definitely not a route that that I think people should be looking at, simply because, again, I mean, I've equated the person to a loaded gun before in the past. You can learn to become a precision marksman with a gun, or you can get drunk and just start firing it off in the air and eventually shoot yourself in the head. Right? It's not the loaded gun's fault, it's what you're doing with it. So it just because you haven't learned how to use it doesn't mean you just put it away and want nothing to do with it anymore. So I think that's probably the most irresponsible thing you could do with the person, because technically you are responsible for its creation. And you're not supposed to abandon your creations.
Well, so, I think the only good part about these people maybe taking the wrong step is at least they're starting to think outside the box, but
at least
it'd be nice
if
everyone could get off the page.
Yeah. No, it's great people are taking a step. Actually, you're right. That's not the worst thing to be doing. The worst thing to be doing is nothing at all. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
And just, you got to remember, every time, you'll notice that the government's only passing more laws, right?
That's not so often
they actually rescind stuff. Yeah. So, the most irresponsible thing people can do is just become complacent with every new thing the government does, because they just take that as consent. Oh, okay. Well, they didn't really seem too opposed to that, so let's see what else we can do.
It's crazy. It just it seems to be mind-boggling when you're brand new to this. But I made sure I listened to all three of the episodes you had up till now, all in one night, to try and get caught up to speed to where we are and how you've been bringing about this. So what would be the commerce versus common law? What's the idea behind that?
Okay. Number one problem I've seen so far is people mixing jurisdictions. And that's where the frustration comes in, where they just decide all of a sudden they just kind of want to say, no, to hell with it, I'm done. I just don't want anything more to do with this, because they've gone into court a couple of times and they just got, you know, walked over by the judge, or they try to bring common law arguments into a statutory court, and so the arguments aren't heard. So then they, again, frustration, well, none of this works, and they don't understand the jurisdictional issues that are going on. And I just went through this myself out in B.C. with the criminal charges I was out in B.C. for, which was another interesting story I'll have to get talking about at some point here. But I went into a first-level provincial statutory court where nothing but statutes exists, which means you may have a perfectly valid defense in natural rights, international law, and you may be completely correct. But the problem is that court only exists inside statutes. It can't see anything but the statutes, which means that even though your defense is perfectly valid, they can't hear it because it doesn't exist in the venue that you're in. So when I was out there prosecuting these charges, that was the problem I faced. Is it was in the entry-level court that we were in. They couldn't hear my reasons for why the police officers were acting outside of the scope of their duties, and that was because the Motor Vehicle Act of BC has absolutely no application to me. And I would have to get into that. We can maybe talk about that a little later. So it's causing a lot of frustration for people, and the problem is that, again, we're trying to teach people that the same problem they were having years ago, and when people usually first start hearing about this, and they start to discover, oh, wait, the person is a corporation. Well, I'm not a corporation, therefore I'm not the person, therefore they can't make statutes apply to me. And that's actually not at all what's going on in the courtroom. They don't believe that you're a person. They don't think you are the person or the name. And we talked about this in some of the subsequent shows. And again, it comes down to, in common law, and I don't even like the word common law. I like natural law, just natural inherent jurisdiction, if you want to call it that, where you're just a man and we're all equal. That's not the arena we're playing in the courts when it comes to the person. We're entirely in commerce law, commercial law, the holy see of commerce above the land. And there's no such thing as man. There's only offices and titles. And there's nothing wrong with that, because as soon as you start to realize it's nothing but offices and titles, once you get your title and your office established of who you are, it turns out you have an awful lot of authority in that world, a lot of authority. But until you correct the record and learn who you are, they're simply not going to recognize you. Like I've said on previous shows, you're the janitor, a janitor walking into a boardroom hearing and trying to issue orders, because they don't view you as anybody in any position of authority, because everything you've done in your entire life, you have created this illusion that you are a trustee, somebody who works for the government. You are a government employee. Hang on one second.
Okay, I'm here. All right, folks. Well, look.
So, okay, I'm back here. Hang on one second.
He's back already.
Yep, there we go, yep. Okay, so, and again, it's all based on presumption. You were the one that helped the government to build this illusion that you're a government agent of some type. Again, only government agents need social insurance numbers. Only government agents need driver's licenses. Only government agents need all these things that the private man doesn't need, the private individual, private organizations. And there's oodles of case law backing that. And if so as soon as people understand that any time there's any dealings to do with the between you and the government or the person and the government, you're dealing exclusively with commerce, commercial law. And that's where title and standing come in, the office you hold. What office do you hold? That's the important part. No different than when you walk into a corporation, you're working for a corporation. Sorry, it's been a long day. It's going to take me a minute here to get my bearings. Nobody cares from a business perspective what your name is when you're working in an office building, right? When you walk into somebody's office, you say, "Hey, you, I need this paper on my desk right away." And they say, "Well, who the hell are you?" And you say, "Well, I'm Bob." Do they care that you're Bob? Do they care what the man's name is?
Well, I guess not, unless it's Bob's place.
Well, unless it's Bob's place, or is it probably better if you let them know what title you are?
Obviously. Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm the acting director for this department. Oh, okay, sorry, yeah, I'll have that on your desk by such and such a time, right? Nobody cares what the janitor says because, well, the janitor is pretty low on the rung and his only duties are mopping the floor. If you're the president and CEO of the corporation, does that carry a little bit more weight?
It does.
Does it matter what his name is or what his title is?
Well, most people working for him probably don't even know his name, so I would go by the title.
Okay. Now, at press conferences down the United States and any other hearings you've ever heard of where Obama goes in front of the camera, what do they call him? Do they call him Mr. Obama?
Nope, they definitely call him the chief executive officer.
Or Mr. President.
Yeah.
Mr. President.
I call him Barry. Okay.
Yeah, Barry Sitoro. But yeah, that's neither here nor there. But it just tells you, because they are an administration. They always refer to themselves as an administration, right? The Obama administration or the Bush administration. Okay? And then they call the chief executive officer is called Mr. President. Not Mr. Bush or Mr. Obama, it's Mr. President. So they're dealing strictly in titles and offices. And that's all that's going on with our person. Your person, the all caps name, is a trust. It's no different than United States Corp. They're actually equal, except they just happen to have, you all have equal rights. equal rights. They just happen to have a lot more resources and a military behind them, right? So they're they got a little bit more power to them. But ultimately, in respect of contract law, you have equal rights. You have just as much right to contract through your person as United States Corp, United States of America Corporation. They're just a little bit bigger of a corporation, but you have equal rights. Your persons are seen as being equal in law. So there's nothing wrong with that. So the, this is going to get in depth here. So that's the difference between, just for starters, between common law and or natural law. Like I said, I don't even like the word common law, and if you want a brief explanation of that, I can get into it too. Common law historically is supposed to be known as the law of the land, the law that applies to people, man and woman, that we all share this common law that's equally applicable to everybody. It applies to all or no one. It applies to all equal or applies to no one kind of deal. Except, for interestingly enough, there seems to be no references to anything called common law going further back than any more than 100 years ago or 200 years ago. It seems to be something that was almost invented recently. And for the most part, it seems like the common law is kind of like almost like the law system that was developed to deal with the common man, the people in England back in the day, the common drunkard, the people that had no respect for rights, no education, no anything. They were the brawlers out in the street, and so they developed a law system to deal with those commoners, as they call them. And so that's why I actually kind of really stopped liking even referring to it as common law, because it's commoner law. It's how the upper crust dealt with the commoners. Which means it's not a law that applies to everyone equally. It was developed for the lowest caste of society, so that there was some law and order enforceable against these people that would not govern their own actions. And that's why I've gone back to the word, I like natural law, I like which is equatable to God-given rights, if you want to call it that. Whether or not you choose to believe in natural rights or not is another matter. But your natural rights are supposed to be things like life, liberty, property. I have the right to own property, and the unconditional use thereof, so long as I don't trespass right up until I'm about to trespass on somebody else's rights. And that's where my rights stop, is where I'm about to infringe on somebody else's rights. So I call that more natural rights. And natural rights are, they're unalienable. They're part of you, no different than your arm. If somebody was to try to remove one of your rights, it would be no different than trying to remove your arm. You're not the same without that right. You've been changed, you've been altered, you've been diminished. You're not you anymore because somebody has taken something away from you that's integral, no different than a limb. So that's what natural rights are. So that's the two different law systems we've got going on as I see it. We've got natural law, which applies to just interactions between private persons, private men and women, individuals, whatever you want to call it. And then you got commercial law. And I think the reason that the commercial law was developed was because of the way our current systems of government work. And government cannot recognize a man because man created government. So it's no different than we can't really interact directly with God, can we? So the government can't really interact with us directly. So they had to create these persons, these trusts to deal with, to deal through when dealing with us, because when government's dealing with a trust, they're not never dealing directly with a man. They're dealing with somebody who holds an office or a title within that trust. So now everything's on an equal playing field from them, right? They're legal fiction. Our persons are legal fiction. It's kind of legal fiction land, but that's actually the only way you can enforce your rights in the commercial world is through your person. And again, don't make the mistake of thinking that they believe you are the person. They don't believe that at all. You can actually call Vital Stats, and you can ask ask them what's going on when a baby is born. Do they register the baby? And they'll tell you, and it's right in the Vital Stats Act. They actually say, no, we don't register people. We don't register babies. We register events. An event took place. That's all that they register. It's a permanent legal record that an event has taken place. And that is that you were born, and then your birth rights were secured by basically placing them in trust with the government, and it created this trust. And again, that's why this is all trust law. Anytime something of value is placed in the care of someone else, you now have a trust relationship. So the government is paid to protect your rights, to protect your birthright as it was placed in their care, the legal title, and you remain the equitable title holder. So everything from there on is just a product of our ignorance now. It's not the government's responsibility to teach you your rights. And because our parents failed in this duty and they sent us to public schools where the government still has no duty to teach you your rights, over the last 80 years we've kind of devolved to the point where we don't understand really any, we don't even understand the differences in law form, never mind what those law forms are. Right? So it's, and I actually have received an unofficial mandate, I like to call it, that it is our duty to teach everybody and get them caught up to speed what's going on here, because the government won't do it. Other entities are forbidden or prohibited from getting involved in this matter. It's up to the people to educate ourselves. If we want to fix everything that's going on right now, it's actually up to us to do it. No one's going to be helping us with this. So there we have it. So we got natural law, I guess we can call it, and we've got commercial law. And unfortunately, most of the world runs on commerce right now. I'd like to change that. I don't really like this system at all. I think it works great if you use it properly, but I don't think most people are capable of using it properly. Either that or we've got a couple of generations to fix things here where, you know, you could have people graduating high school that have been trained in trust law and what their person is and how to go out there and operate in the world with some honor and with some knowledge in contracting and contract law. But what are the chances of that happening anytime soon?
Not in this lifetime.
Not in this lifetime. Well, maybe in this lifetime. If it started tomorrow, it'd be 20 years before the first kids are ready. But aside from that, we're left with learning this stuff on the internet and getting caught up to speed. So the person, commerce, and again, it really is the holy see of commerce above the land. And again, I believe it's going back all the way to Rome and even Egypt before that. But that's what the Vatican ended up becoming, was when they converted Catholicism basically into a law form, if you want to call it that. The Romans were commercial. Everybody knew that the Romans were real big on their commerce. You know, they built all the roads. They were big on trade. They were really big into commerce, and they were purely commercial in nature, and even the persons go back all the way to then. And all they did was they basically codified it, and they turned it into a religion, so to speak, because I guess I believe personally they got tired of having armies and paying armies to go and conquer nations and forcing all their subjugation on people. So they turned it into a religion and got the people to believe in it so that they would fight for it instead of against it, and now we have Catholicism. And that's all the Holy See of Commerce above the land is. So we have all this commercial law above the land. And again, they're two completely different law forms. One doesn't recognize the other. And that's why we cannot go into court and start arguing as a man and talking about natural rights. They don't see a man. They only see offices in these courtrooms. So it's more important what office you're holding, right? And that's where the concepts of standing and equitable claims and all these kind of things come in, which is what we're trying to teach people. And it turns out to be completely true. And once you are able to understand who you are and then go out and enforce that through your person, what we find is that some really miraculous things start to happen. And that it's a great conduit for enforcing your rights, but it has to be done through your person. So these newfound beliefs out there that all you have to do is waive your right to be recognized as a person isn't really valid, especially in light of the fact that you've actually been operating that way your entire life, and now you're choosing to say, well, now that I went out and acquired all these debts and these liabilities and obligations, I'm just going to walk away from all that and say I waive my right to be recognized as a person now. Well, no, you can't even do that. That actually is just proving how irresponsible you are, that the minute you find out there's some liabilities with doing this, you just walk away from it? Walking away from responsibilities? The person is yours. You own it. And that's the name. You own the name. And that's why I don't agree with this new stance on just walking away from things. And I'm not even ever really probably going to talk about natural law a whole lot, because really it has very little relevance in our daily life. But commerce does. Until we replace the system, or this system just fails or ceases to exist, every day from the time we wake up in the morning till the time we go to bed, commerce has a huge impact in our life because every time you get a bill in the mail, it's in the person's name. Everything we do is through the person, and there's nothing wrong with this as long as you learn how to use it. So I guess, is there really any gray areas left on the difference between natural law and commercial law?
Well, I guess it would be more like, is this applying in like how you said there's different courtrooms. Now, does this apply in criminal court, and or is this all kind of like lawsuits type of litigation and stuff like that? Or like, what would be like the big difference? You know what I'm saying?
All
like,
the above. All the above. When you go into, in Manitoba here, it's Queen's Bench. In Ontario and BC, it's Superior Court. Where there's, say, civil cases, where it's a civil lawsuit, where either you're being sued, where you're the plaintiff and somebody else is the respondent, or you're the respondent and somebody else is the plaintiff. That's dealing entirely, you look at every lawsuit, you're recognized as one and the same as the name.
So that's
again,
all
that
commerce.
It is all commerce. I mean, it's a civil lawsuit. It's just, like I said, there's no reason to not like the system that's going on right now. Then it comes down to, especially with a civil matter, that's an entirely equitable case. You have somebody who's either claiming an injury or a breach of contract or a failure to perform a duty or a debt of some type. There's just literally an actual claim of injury of some type that you're going after somebody for. And that's just all based purely in equity. And that just being the value of the injury that has happened to you and the restitution that you're seeking. How much? What kind of payment do you want to make amends? And even then, the only reason you should ever be going to court is because all attempts at peaceful negotiation outside of the courtroom has failed. And actually, remember this point, remind me about this, because this has very big implications for criminal court. So the courts really shun on people who bring a matter to court when they haven't even attempted to resolve the conflict without the need of the courts, which means I have harmed you in some way. And instead of you just coming to me and saying, hey, you've damaged me. You cost me $300 by what you did. You broke this. You damaged my property. You destroyed my fence. You drove into my fence with your car. Something. You're supposed to come to me and just say, hey, look, just make restitution. Just pay for the damages and, you know, we'll call it a day kind of thing. So the courts are only supposed to be there as a last resort when the parties cannot come to some kind of a mutual agreement here to settle whatever their differences are, and that's the only reason you take a matter to court. So now you flip over to criminal court, and it's the same thing, but there's a very big difference here, because in criminal, in provincial court up here in Canada, it's always the Crown coming after somebody. And we spoke about this in one of the last episodes, I think, about who the Crown really is. And there's provincial Crown, which is the Crown in right of whatever the province you live in. Then there's federal Crown, the Crown in right of Canada, and then there's other crowns after that yet. Don't automatically go assuming that every single crown is Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth. They were talking about her, they would say her. Okay, it's even less words to say Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II instead of Her Majesty the Queen in right of Canada. They would save ink, if that's the excuse they used to like to use. Oh, it saves ink by us printing in all capital letters or whatever nonsense they got that week. So in criminal... and I've pointed to this to people in the paperwork all the time, and anybody can always go look this up. But I'm not really a big stickler on this, because it's more of the operation of the courts than it is the names that appear in all the documents. But when you go to court for a criminal matter, it doesn't matter what it is, from a parking ticket to murder, the name on the docket will always be the entire all-capital-letter name. That's the name of the trust. And then after that, when you walk into the courtroom and they call the name out loud, they're calling the name of the trust out. That's now the matter before the court. So that court is actually operating like a boardroom now for that trust. And the judge is being the administrator for the proceedings. And they call your name, and they are, you get up there, oh, who are you? I'm so-and-so. I'm Dean Clifford. Oh, okay. You're the one the Crown summoned. But if you look on the actual charges, the actual charging instrument that the clerk has, and it'll be the same when you go to jail, by the way, when they have your name on the whiteboard at jail or any documents when you're in the jail, your first name is going to be spelled upper and lower case. And your second name, your last name, is going to be spelled all capital last name. So that's different, okay? The all caps name, every word capitalized is capitis diminutio maxima. That's the name of a person. It's the name of a trust. And then they've identified you in criminal court as this all upper and lower case first name spelled normally, followed by the last name spelled entirely in all capital letters. And that's capitis diminutio media. And that's a Roman civil officer. Okay? So the Crown is bringing you to criminal court claiming that you are a civil officer.
Now on a ticket or a written fine, they're always all capitals, though, right?
Well, no, it depends. I mean, I've seen all the above, but then the other indicators are is when you do have something like a criminal charge, no matter how they spell the name, like, say, in a traffic offense, they'll always have, a driver's license number, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes they even just started going, oh, okay, fine, you think it's just all about the name? Fine. And they spell your name upper or lower case, but then they still have a driver's license number attached to it. It doesn't matter how they spell your name in that case, because they've attached a driver's license to the name, which means you're automatically recognized as a civil officer because that's the only thing that would have a driver's license. Driver's licenses are issued by the state. They're state property. Only their officers and agents have one or require one. And if you have one, you are assumed by default to be an agent or officer of the Crown.
Yeah, I'm just looking at my last ticket here, and that's what it says. There's my driver's license number.
There you go, of course.
But I didn't even give him a driver's license number. I didn't even hand him a license. That's why.
Then what you have is you have a fabricating evidence charge against the cop that did that then.
Okay.
He just went onto the computer, looked up a driver's license number, attached it to you automatically thinking that's you. You didn't give him that information. He just fabricated evidence.
Yep.
That's why they always need you to produce a driver's license to get jurisdiction.
I didn't give them anything.
They need you to testify against yourself. And the minute they start just going on the computer and getting the information themselves, they're actually fabricating evidence, and that's very bad.
Naughty, naughty. Yep.
Yeah, but they know that 99% of us have no clue what's going on, so they don't care. They just know that they can do all these, commit these crimes every day with impunity.
Now,
they're not liable.
On your first episode of Conscious Living, before you had the how-to show, I was I called in and asked a question about that, and you had said, I like how you said, well, it's not your ticket, it's not your driver's license. The Ontario still owns it, so, like, it's, you know, that was what I wanted to go say to them, but apparently I've just let this thing go, and I probably have a notice for my license and all that other fun stuff.
Yeah. It's private property. Sorry, not private property. It's the property of the state. The state owns it. It's not yours. And you tell them, I'm not operating under it right now. I'm in possession of it, but it's not mine, and I don't even want it. Here, do you want it? I'll surrender it to you right now. Because right now I'm just kind of exercising one of my rights.
So the next time I get pulled over, my first best response is, excuse me, do I look like I'm acting as an agent or an officer of the Crown?
That's a wonderful way to destroy a lot of the presumptions you're going to try to operate off of. Yes, and if you happen to have your phone handy and you got it on dictaphone mode or record,
you
may want to record all that.
Yeah,
absolutely. And they're going to say no. They're going to say no, and you tell them, "Oh, I'm a private individual. I'm a private citizen. Can I help you?"
Yeah. So now I'm sure that you've done this 100 times. When you get pulled over and there's an ignorant officer who doesn't even know what he's talking about, like how you mentioned the RCMP officer didn't know that there was a Bill of Rights, like, how do you get past them with, like, and still make it home? You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to go and say to the officer who gave me this ticket and all that, you know, like, you're fabricating evidence and you know, all these other wonderful things about, that's not my license, that's yours. Like, you own it, the state owns it.
Yep.
But All I picture the next step is I'm going to jail. Like,
that might be the case.
Well, I'm totally understand that, but I mean, how is it?
And this is why the driver's license argument is the one that I usually leave for last. I tell people, until you really understand what's going on, you know you can hold your own. For the $50 it costs for a driver's license, carry it with you. Be prepared to make the argument at the side of the road, even though you have it, just to say, look, well, I carry this with me, but I'm in possession of it, but it's not my property, and I'm not liable for it. Just make sure you say things like that for when you're going to court. Otherwise, it's not the fight worth having right now. I usually stick to income taxes and property taxes because I don't believe in either one of those, and I believe the world would be free tomorrow if we shut the governments down by simply cutting back their revenue 90% to what it should be.
Now, when you mentioned taxes, I just recently got employed at another place, and of course the first forms they bring out is, here's your federal and your provincial taxes, sign the bottom, don't think anything about it, have a nice
yep.
day. So when I asked the lady, the human resource lady, funny name, human resources, I said, hey lady, isn't this voluntary, or, oh no, we just hand in a default if you don't. I said, no, I mean like taxes. Now, she looked at me like a monkey solving a math problem. Oh no, there's no way that's true. I'm like, well, I'm not 100% myself, but I'm pretty sure that this is all voluntary, and it started back when the war started, and we were supposed to be contributing and all this other, but, I mean, like, what happened? I'm paying private offshore banks now, and I don't think they liked me right off the bat. So what do when I get to the human resource lady? Like,
yeah, you got to remember, again, you're dealing with a human resource lady that works at the front counter of some random miscellaneous corporation who literally just files the same probably set of three different documents all day long, every day, and has never put one ounce of thought into what she did. They don't think about this stuff.
How come nobody takes the time to learn this? Like, it just boggles my mind that there's all these people online listening and interested, and you obviously took the time, and I'm very interested to learn all this, but how come the general public has this brick wall of there's no point in learning this?
Well, we're getting there. You got to remember, 10 years ago when I first got involved in this, actually it was longer than that ago now, but 10 years when I became comfortable enough that I would start actually speaking with people about this, like whole tables full of people would get really mad, and they'd tell me, you know, well, don't live here if you don't like paying this taxes, and get off our roads, and don't use our hospitals. Like, people became really angry. And
yeah.
And as we're getting closer to, say, even 2 years ago now, like, I'd be out and about on my picking up materials for my job sites, and I'd be at suppliers and the warehouses and talking to some of the workers, and they'd be like, hey, did you know that you don't have to pay income taxes? You know, and people are starting to bring it up around me now, kind of thing, and I just start laughing. I'd be like, oh, well, actually, it's my understanding you're not required to file income taxes, but once you file, yeah, you better believe it, you will be paying them. Yes, that is a law now because there's a contract in place. And they're like, oh, have you heard of this? And I'm like, you know, and I'll try to point them to a few websites. Then last year, I think all hell started breaking loose, and this year has just been a slaughterhouse for the government. People are waking up all over the place. People are fighting back. No matter how much they really try to harm people, and they publish that absolute piece of rubbish, Meads versus Meads, trying to scare people into believing if you even raise a free man argument that you're going to go to jail and you're going to receive four times the allowable fines or penalties, just to try to get people to shut up and stop making these arguments. I mean, if that isn't a sign of fear from these people, I don't know what is. Right, and now, so you got them openly talking about free men, and free men are all terrorists now. The government's actually publishing like papers now saying that these free men are terrorists. And I don't know, have you ever actually read the preamble to the Canadian Bill of Rights?
I've read many, many, many documents about this. I couldn't name like word for word anything, but I've gone through them. Like, I've actually taken the time, but
yeah, but for all the bad press they're giving free men.
Oh,
and
even
calling us free men, even if we don't want to be called that, they're calling us free men, so they're trying to turn us into some organization now. But all you have to do is read the preamble, the first line, the first sentence of the Canadian Bill of Rights. The Parliament of Canada affirming that the Canadian nation is founded upon principles that acknowledge the supremacy of God, the dignity and worth of the human person, and the position of the family in a society of free men and free institutions. If we're so evil, how come we're in the first line of the preamble to the Canadian Bill of Rights?
Well, you must be a terrorist then.
Apparently it's the Canadian Bill of Terrorism instead of Bill of Rights. I don't know. But again, I don't derive my rights from that document. And if you read through the document, it states right in there in Part 2 that the Canadian government acknowledges that there is already existing rights, pre-existing rights in Canada. There have always been and continue to be pre-existing rights. That means that people had rights long before the government came along. Okay, well, that obviously then insinuates that we don't derive our rights and freedoms from the government. So if we don't get them from the government, then who are they to put conditions on those rights or diminish them or try to take them away from us? Well, they're nobody, and they are nothing. And that was actually part of my case there from last week that I'm not going to – that maybe that's a thing for a future episode, but boy, where do you want to go from that? So, no, people are getting more interested, and again, I think I spoke about that with Tony before, is there's never been a better time in human history to fight and to enforce your rights, because if the most you're looking at is maybe a month in jail, well, big deal. What would you like, a lifetime of slavery or a month in jail?
Yeah, it's a good trade.
It's a pretty good trade. I mean, they can't just shoot you like they used to back in the day. Who knows, maybe they'll start doing that next year when they realize that they've lost control completely. But in the meantime, how about we all just learn our rights and start enforcing them and exercising them properly? So, and not get flustered and angry because we don't want to take 5 minutes to learn commerce and who we are in regards to the person. And we can, I think we've covered that. Now, we went over this ad nauseum in the ownership show that we did with who you are in relation to the person. And what's more important is your name or your title when they're addressing you with regards to the person. Because, again, the person just identifies the trust. Then you want to identify the office that you hold, right? That's the most important part in commerce. So, and again, I mean, so natural law, natural existing law, I don't use the word common law. When you got the Canadian Bill of Rights, which is their legislation, that acknowledges that our rights were pre-existing before the government came here. Well, that's a pretty good indicator that natural rights obviously still exist then. But believe it or not, you actually can only enforce them through your person, if that makes any sense. and that's where the whole free will thing comes in. That's actually another whole maybe segment we're going to do about how you go about actually enforcing your rights through the person after you've got your proper identity and your proper status established. But let's see, let's go to section 2 here, part 2. Here we go. Part 2, savings, 5, subsection 1. Nothing in part 1 shall be construed or abrogate or abridge any human right or fundamental freedom not enumerated therein that may have existed in Canada at the commencement of this act. Right, so there's already human rights freedoms that exist, and they wanted to make sure that it was well established that this act in no way infringed, abrogated, or tried to remove any of your existing rights. It just wanted to reinforce the fact that you do have all these rights. So you don't derive your rights from this. This just reinforces the fact that government actually has no right to enforce its will on you contrary to these existing rights. And remember, you can always remove your own rights. You can always contract your rights away. I mean, if I enter into a contract with somebody to build a fence for them for $5,000 and I fail in my duties to live up to the obligations I was paid to do, do my human rights count? Can I just say, well, you know, piss on you. You can't force me to finish that job.
Well, I'm going to guess on no.
Well, of course. I've been paid for a service, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I've damaged somebody if I don't complete that contract. So didn't I kind of just contract some of my rights away? I can't just walk away and say, screw you, man. You can't force me to do anything.
Yep. So you can contract your rights away.
Of course you can. So you agreed to do something, and you have to live up to the terms of that. Now, having said that, is it really a good argument to use to maybe just start to tell the courts you waive the right to be recognized as a person after you have spent a whole lifetime entering into agreements and generating obligations on behalf of the person?
So it would be better to start to use that person wisely instead of giving up on that person.
Yes, because again, it is your property, and you're always liable for your creation. That's like a maxim of law. You never cease being liable for something that you created, for a creation of yours. And the person does not go away just because you cease to be, you waive the right to be recognized as it. You're basically just trying to deflect all your own responsibilities because I guess maybe it just became too hard on you to pry yourself away from the television for more than 5 minutes. Right? When there's great things you can do with the person. There's great things you can do with the person. You just got to learn how to use it. I just reamed out a bunch of Americans on this recently, and I told them, I said, not to give you guys a hard time, because, I mean, really, like, at one point in time in history, the world used to really look up to you people. I mean, every single American knew the law, knew their rights, and it was a great nation. I said, and now today, you're viewed the world over as some of the most ignorant people on the face of the planet, because you can't take your face away from the TV and Dancing with the Stars for 5 minutes to learn your rights anymore. You've become the most ignorant people on the planet, and you're losing your country because of it. It's not great anymore.
I heard that. I heard originally that back in the day, everyone, like you said, was educated, and they all knew their own rights, and they all were their own lawyers, and lawyers were only for people incapable of doing it, like a handicapped person or mentally unstable. And now it seems that 99.9% of the population's walking around with lawyers, and that's what they base their law knowledge on. I paid my lawyer.
Yeah, they don't do anything not through a lawyer. Everything is now done through their lawyers. And if that isn't a prime indicator of a whole nation of people that don't even know one lick of their own rights because they got to consult their lawyer on everything. Then all it takes is an organization of lawyers to all get together and conspire and connive behind the scenes to deprive you of all your rights because you're now looking at to them every time. Gee, do we know an organization that may have done that?
Kind of almost like a bar association.
Oh yeah, shit, they might have done that. Oh, that really sucks.
Yep.
They got us believing that law is complicated and convoluted, and we have to go to lawyers for determinations on everything. What nonsense, okay? And we'll probably cover that in a future episode regarding licenses to practice and the ability to interpret their acts and statutes. So, which, again, if you're paying attention, they've actually given us the best defense we'll ever need in every single scenario in the courtroom. Every time they try to say, well, I'm sorry, but you don't have a license to practice, so you can't do that. They just gave you your out in any criminal charge right there if you know how to turn that around on them. You say, well, okay, so I don't have a license to practice law, which means it's not even possible for me to interpret that statute properly. Then is it reasonable that I can be forced to obey something that I'm not even qualified to interpret? Are you on fucking drugs? You're going to make me liable for something that I'm not even qualified to interpret? How is it possible for me to even abide by it if I don't have a license to even interpret the stupid thing? What
they
kind
just,
of nonsense are you people pulling around here?
They just hate you in court, don't they?
Yeah. You have no idea. It's lovely. And you just turn everything around on them. And you expose them for how pathetic it really is. There's nothing they can say that you can't turn around on them when you know what's going on, and that's when they start leaving you alone, because they know they can't fool you. And yeah, you're right, the Americans there, I mean, it took the Bar Association almost 200 years to infiltrate the United States because people knew their rights here. The insurance companies, the bankers first started coming over here, and they go back to England going and say, oh shit, these people are educated, man. They took their Bibles with them, their law books. They cannot be deceived. They know their stuff. So it took 200 years of them opening schools here and slowly infiltrating people and getting little tentacles, or little disgusting, slimy, weaselly tentacles out there to start subverting the people, which, again, really began in earnest, like, what, about 80, 90 years ago?
Well,
and then it's just been, shit, it's just been a black diamond slope downhill after that.
Well, now we got the Biggest Loser on TV, so everyone's got
there
a lot.
There you go. Well, yeah, dude, I don't have time to learn my rights. God, this is the season finale of Biggest Loser.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. I get to a new job recently, and I go in, and I start to, like, you know, just kind of listen to what people are saying around the water cooler and at the coffee room there, and it's either sports or random gibberish I don't even understand. Like, it's amazing what society's come to these days.
Yeah, and that's and actually, there's another jurisdictional issue for you, because all jurisdiction is language. It's talking about my language. What's your jurisdiction? My language. If you don't understand one another's language, it's not possible for you two to come to an understanding, is it? So language is very important, and that's how sad our society has become. It's almost like when non-TV watchers are around a group of TV watchers, I have no idea what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah, it's like when they're talking about their sports, I don't even know what game they're talking about, and they're all looking at me funny, and I'm like, I don't even know.
Yeah. And I'll be out for a beer somewhere, and somebody will be like, "Hey, I heard you're into law and stuff like that. Like, what's up with that kind of thing?" And I'll talk for a couple minutes, and I look at them, and they've all got this look on their face where I can just tell they have no fucking clue what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and they
and
think
I thought
we're
I was
the
starting
crazy
at the most basic possible explanation I could even start at.
And they believe we're the crazy ones.
Yeah, and they think we're crazy. There you go.
This guy's read a book. He read a book, guys. Look at this guy. He read a book.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, he should be on Biggest Loser. He read a book. That's why I like it when people watch that movie, Idiocracy, eh? I saw that a number of years back, and I just went, I didn't even hear about it at first. Somebody sent me, somebody like, "Oh, dude, you got to watch this movie, Idiocracy," and I'm like, okay. And a couple months later, I'm like, oh, hey, somebody told me to watch that, and I watched it. I cannot tell you how hard I laughed the whole way through that movie. And I phoned my buddy up, and I said, "Thank you so much for telling me to watch that movie. I just spent the last 2 hours laughing my ass off." And they're like, yeah, that stuff, the future really is going to be that bad, isn't it? And I'm like, gonna be? Are you kidding? I was in that courtroom last week. The only thing missing was a giant gavel.
We're living it now.
Yeah, we're here. So it is that bad. Again, we just came from that the courtroom this last week here. I think we'll maybe do another episode that deals with this more. But I actually had a judge, the criminal charges, because I brought them for a procedure hearing to have either a summons or warrants issued. It's supposed to go before a JP, just where they hear the evidence and determine whether or not that statute was broken, right?
Yep.
Well, I didn't get that. Okay. Court was 45 minutes late convening because I put my affidavit and my exhibits in there, and I think they knew they were screwed because I took all power of attorney away from the Crown. The Crown couldn't interfere in state proceedings, so they ended up. I ended up going before a sitting judge for a procedure hearing. And then this judge proceeded to testify from the bench, practice law from the bench, told me that she did not understand who I claimed I was in my preamble to my charges, but then told me I didn't have the right to issue my own license plate. I said, well, excuse me, you just told me you didn't understand who I was, but now you're telling me what my rights are? How is that even possible? If you don't understand who I am, how could you possibly tell me what my rights are? They don't want to talk about that. Then she made a determination that was completely contrary to the Supreme Court of Canada that she's bound by, and I provided the case law and said, well, this is what the Supreme Court says. You're bound by that. Well, she made a determination contrary to that. Said, well, you're bound by that. You don't even have the authority to overrule the Supreme Court. How is that even possible? She did it. So it's brutal. Like, it's almost like, geez, I felt like I was sitting at that table full of people watching hockey all over again, and I was actually in one of our own courtrooms.
Unbelievable.
So that's how sad things are. So, and now, judges, by the way, aren't supposed to practice law from the bench. That means that unless your opponent or you has brought up a piece of case law or a right or anything, it doesn't exist until one of you two bring it in, right?
Yeah.
Well, she was pulling stuff out of all over the place on her own.
Testifying.
Well, and then she was testifying by trying to tell me, well, Mr. Clifford, you don't have the right to do that. Excuse me? Who are you? I didn't ask you to make a determination about that. So, again, testifying. That was her own. She was testifying against me. I don't have the right to do that, apparently. Well, anyway, I'm not going to get into it. It was funny. She kept actually trying to avoid making a determination as much as possible, though. She kept saying, well, Mr. Clifford, I... And this ought to be an eye-opener. It shouldn't be an eye-opener. Sorry, I was going to say it should be an eye-opener. When you have a sitting judge agreeing with you, yes, I agree with you, and subsequently the Supreme Court, because that was the cites I brought in, that the Charter, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, is the supreme law of Canada. And any law, statute, act, anything, doesn't matter how far down the chain you go, right to parking tickets, any law or statute that's inconsistent with that charter is of no force or effect. And I read her the case law that said that she has the duty to view laws inconsistent with the charter as being of no force or effect. And then Section 32, the Supreme Court law cite that I brought in, clearly states that the charter only applies to governments, period, not the private individual. She agrees with that. And then we clearly established that I am a private individual and I am non-government. She agreed with that. Gee, thanks for agreeing with me on that. She then went on to make the determination that the Motor Vehicle Act of British Columbia still applies to me.
So now
how's that for nonsensical?
Now she's just making stuff up.
She's just making shit up now, exactly, hoping I'm going to believe it. I started laughing. I said, okay, let's go over this all again. We went through it again. I said, okay, charter is supreme law. Anything inconsistent with the charter is no force or effect. Charter only applies to government. I am not government, which means that the cops trying to enforce the Motor Vehicle Act against me is wrong, which means that they were actually committing crimes because they have no authority to enforce that legislation against me because it's inconsistent with the charter. I'm non-government. Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you there, Mr. Clifford. I said, I don't care if you disagree with me or not. Are you making a determination? Well, it's my opinion that I didn't ask you for your opinion. Are you making a determination of law that that act still applies to me? Well, Mr. Clifford, I don't agree that... I said, I don't care if you agree with me. Are you making a determination or not? You know, a little nervous now and kind of scratching her head a bit, and she's, yes, I'm making a determination that the Motor Vehicle Act still applies to you in this matter. I said, okay, thanks. You're liable for that now. Now we can move on. I said, now having said that, now that you've made a determination that you're liable for, would you please explain to me how you arrived at that conclusion? Could you walk me through your reasoning and help me to understand how it was possible for you to arrive at that determination? Mr. Clifford, I am not going to get into these nonsensical arguments with you. So now apparently explaining your determination is a nonsensical argument. Number one, it's not an argument. It's asking you to explain yourself. And number two, you're bound by law to explain to me how you arrived at that determination. But she knew she was completely full of shit, and that's why she wouldn't go on to explain it. So again, now we've got determinations in the face of the Supreme Court, contrary to testifying from the bench and practicing law from the bench. So this is going to be an interesting one. But hopefully we're making it easier for the next batch of people to come through. So.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, little bit off topic, I think, there, even though I'm not, there's not much really to cover in way of a topic to do with, I guess it's natural law versus commerce. We covered that pretty early on. It is a little bit more complicated than that, but it probably wouldn't help most people to really get into it any more than we have. I can appreciate you did a bit of a crash course there before we were going to do the interview there last week, but most of this stuff obviously is not something you can comprehend. After watching, you know, 4 hours of videos.
Well, I had already, before I saw any of your YouTube videos, before I saw you on Global Factor and that, I had already been researching this and
yeah,
probably bumping into lots of the wrong things to do and trying to follow the different books. Like, I was reading the Joe Bannister books on the IRS and all that, and all your typical truther ones about this information. So then... Once
Man, that was a hell of a victory Joe Bannister had there.
Yeah. Once I start hearing your information, then it's easier to recognize because I've already got a little bit of the touch on it, so it's not like I'm just completely blown away new at it. So it's interesting to start to follow along the actual what really is supposed to be going. So it's neat. But we're in the second hour now. There's tons of questions on the email of Ask Dean if you wanted me to get into any
of
those.
Yeah, sure, let's fire some up. I think we've covered enough. We've done enough talking today here. Let's see what people are kind of wanting to know.
All right, well, these ones, the first ones I'll get into are all the people from last week, because there was a number of them, and this week it's flooded. There's like 50 emails in here.
Lovely.
Yeah. All the ones that have multiple questions, I'll just read off the first one, because other, like, this guy's got three already, so I mean, I'll give one question out of each one so we can get the more people.
And I'll try to keep this more brief than I was last time. I think last time I was like going on for 5-8 minutes answering a question. I'll try to keep it as brief as possible.
Okay. Hi, Dean. You have shown that the government rules only apply to government agents in Canada. Do you know where to find that in writing for the U.S.? Jim in Oregon. Thanks. I really appreciate your time. Count on me joining a monthly membership if you ever set that up.
Interestingly enough, me and a friend were just going through some case law last night. And what we got from the United States, which was an interesting one, is yes. Yikwo versus Hopkins. I just got sent this last night. And I love this one, if you can read into it especially. And it says, sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. That actually tells you right there that all government power derives from the grant that we gave them. We granted them any powers they have. We delegated them certain powers, which means that we are the source of authority. It told you that right there, right? Right at the very beginning. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law. It is the author and source of law. So that's who we are. We are the author and source of law with respect to our persons. And you combine that with the ownership that we talked about the other week, and you start to find out that because you own it, and I spoke about this actually backs up what I talked about last time, when you own something completely, a sole owner of something like a corporation, your word is law with respect to that person. This case law just backed that right up. Sovereignty is the author and source of law, right? Okay. So there's some American legislation for you. There's legislation all over the place, Supreme Court decisions that tell you that all power is with the people in the first place. They've actually got better stuff than we have here in Canada. It's very clear. I mean, Chicago Motor Coach. If you want to know if you have the right to travel or drive a carriage, a car, an automobile, a friggin' pogo stick down the highways. Chicago Motor Coach is your Supreme Court decision regarding that. So, okay, next question.
Okay, here's one that says, hi, guys, I'm really beginning to understand a lot now. Thank you. But Dean keeps talking about getting your standing, as in man and not a citizen, legally clear with the government. How does one achieve this exactly? What paperwork process should be completed? And when complete, what evidence will one hold, for example, to show an officer or judge? Many thanks and much love, Little Red.
Okay. The most simple question is, if you have proof of claim means a fact. If you have a fact that establishes something, for instance, say a trust relationship between you and the government, and that would be a live birth record. It was deposited with them. It's held in trust. And because you are the depositor, the grantor, you own whatever is held in trust. You own all equitable title to what's being held in trust. That puts the government in a subservient position. That means they're the trustees. They must now obey the will of whoever owns the security that they're holding in trust. Once you get to understand that, you will start to figure out in a real hurry how to place conditions on things, how to enforce your will, how to give notice, and what evidence and documents you want to produce to start making people a little bit scared of you. So that's all I'll offer up for that. When you understand what's going on, you will know. You don't need to be told, well, take this document into the court and say this. Because then I'm trying to offer up a one-sentence solution that all they have to do is question you a couple of times. They're going to know if you know jack shit or not. So learn this stuff. But it is all about ownership. And with ownership comes your rights. I'll leave that one at that. Hello. Or maybe I'll just keep talking. Oh, there you go.
I had my mic on mute. I didn't want to be making background noise, and I didn't realize I wasn't talking. Okay, I got another one. It says, has Dean heard of the global passport, and what does he think of it? Thanks, Chad.
Yeah, I think that's the one that the guy out of the United States there has got the international passport, I think, or something like that. It's $350. I don't think it's necessary. I think it would work, but then again, if you read the website itself, it tells you that a lot of governments just have the option of just saying, nah, we don't have to recognize that. And that's because the passport, even though it claims to be working through the treaty there, the United Nations treaty, these governments all need separate treaties with themselves for their passports to really be effective. Yeah, give it a try, but you should be able to get the proper style of passport from your own government. Again, it all comes from standing. The government is there to do a job for you. And if you go and get a passport, you want to get the one that properly identifies your standing and the office that you hold in the commercial world. And that is up for you to go and negotiate and enforce with the government and make sure that they give you the proper one. Again, up here in Canada, I'm sure people have gone and looked at their passports and it says type P, passport on it. And we used to make a joke that, yeah, the P probably stands for peasant or peon. And now we're thinking it really actually might. But that's the first thing that's on the passport. It says type. Well, why are there different types of passports if the passport simply just identifies the person? So there's obviously different passports. And there's ones that have the proper standing attached to it, like diplomatic immunity kind of ones. And you're not going to have to worry about any of that kind of nonsense no more. You're not a slave. You're not a peon. So I leave that to people to go and search out.
Wow, I'm just reading your next email one. It's so long, I don't know. It seems really interesting, but it's like a page.
these need to be in point form. People have to realize we're just trying to get a quick radio show here out of the problem, or out of it here.
This one basically looks like they were trying to use some of the information and are being detained and handcuffed to their car and begging for release. And yeah. Want me to read it?
Begging. You should be ordering, number one. Don't beg for release. And you know what? Relax. If you get kidnapped, if you get handcuffed, these are all charges against these people. It doesn't matter who they presume you are, okay? I can't go and grab somebody off the street and lock them in my basement under a presumption without being liable when I finally do let them go. So I keep telling people, if you're going to try this stuff, be prepared to actually get arrested and go to jail for a couple of days if necessary. Okay? That's part of it. That's the only way to enforce your rights, because these people know that after one or two days in jail, you will fold. You will fold like a cheap, shitty piece of paper, and they got you, and then they're going to make you wish you'd never questioned their authority. So make a choice. Either stand your ground or do what you're told. But don't do anything in the middle, because you're just going to wish you did what you were told if you do anything in the middle. So move on to the next question.
All right. That one, it seemed pretty interesting. Maybe I'll have to, like...
It probably is, but I'd have to read it and actually, like, take more time with it than we have here tonight.
Yeah.
We'll come back to it if we got lots of time left. How about that?
All right. Jeez.
Okay.
Oh, it's so hard to go through all of these. There's, like... Oh, here's a huge please help.
Oh, I guess so. I feel bad at times because I get these emails sometimes where people will contact Lee in the UK and he'll forward them on to me, and it's people, again, help, 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 or urgent, you know, in all capital letters with about 80 million exclamation marks after it. And it's like I know people are in trouble, and that's just the reality of where we're at in life right now. But holy shit, don't believe these things the last minute, everybody.
This one's basically saying, is there some books you would consider mandatory reading for this study?
Oh, man. Again, you know what? I've recommended before, and I'm going to stick with it, The Law of Nations. That's Emmer de Vattel. I think it cost me $17 to order it. There's no copyright on it anymore because it was originally printed in like 1750 or something like that. It's a tough read, but if you want to understand international law, like the rights of the person and your right of equality, you can start to consider basically what it is your person is your own nation. It's an estate. It's a state. And that's what the United States of America is. It's the United Estates. It's all of you people pledging your estates to the government. So you have like a market share now, right? You've got a bunch of United States. You can choose to self-govern anytime you want. So which means your person is its own nation, literally. And you're also an investor in the United States. You don't have to... So start to think about your person as your own nation, and you can declare sovereignty anytime you want. What was the case law I just read on sovereignty? Look up case law on the matter, and read case law if you want to know. Again, sovereignty is itself, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, again, you delegated it to them. Sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. They're supposed to be acting on your behalf. They're not supposed to be telling you what to do. Those are two separate things. Again, government exists to protect already existing rights, not put restrictions on them. So, I'll leave it at that. Read the Law of Nations. I don't know. Go out and find some interesting books, and if you find one that's really good, let me know. I'd probably like to read it. Oh, yeah. Read stuff, like, again, some of the founding fathers here, whether they're Freemasons or not, I don't care. Get out of the conspiracy stuff. You want to read some smart stuff, read some of the writings of people like Thomas Jefferson. Read stuff like that. Don't read case law. Case law is shit. It's crap. It's garbage. Some of it's good, but for the most part, it's just more opinion. It's somebody's opinion of what something means. Okay? People keep wanting me to point to some supreme law source, like a book that is the definitive source on what something is. That's just something else written by another man. It's just his opinion.
I'm just scrolling through all your questions here. Not one of them is under, like, 10 pages long.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Yeah, we need to get a course going because, yeah, I obviously can't be answering, like, 10-page-long questions.
This last guy's talking about, it's like a 10-page thing about his house, mortgage, he's losing it, there's signs on the door now, like...
Man, I appreciate the fact that people are writing these questions and taking their time to do it. I believe I even covered... some of this stuff in one of the previous episodes, and again, until you're prepared to make this fight, pay the mortgage. Never stop paying in advance, because now you're the one that's broken the terms of the agreement, because you just stop making it, and the only claim people can ever make is, mortgages are fraud, because I read online that fiat currency has no gold backing it, which means there's no such thing as money, which means there's no such thing as a mortgage, it's fraud, and blah, blah, blah. Like these things that don't have any weight whatsoever in a courtroom. So I got pressured out in Vancouver after a seminar one time where somebody came up and they said, look, what would you do if the bank was foreclosing on your house and you had three payments to make and if you don't make them like by next week, like the bank's just going to come and take your home? What would you do? I said, I'd make the payments. No, that's not what I meant. I mean, like how do you get rid of them? I said, You make them. That's how you get rid of them. You make the payments. Well, no, but I don't want to make them. I said, then why'd you get the mortgage? Well, no, I want to get rid of the mortgage. I said, well, you entered into a contract, didn't you? Well, yeah, but the bank, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they go into all that kind of free man mumbo-jumbo. I said, look, none of that is going to work in court. I said, you actually don't know where a mortgage comes from, which means you can't possibly make the argument. You'd be better off borrowing the money off somebody and making those payments and getting caught up for now. And then if you got to go find a second job in the meantime, or you got to cut back on your beer, or you got to cancel your cable subscription, again, you know the first thing I usually ask people when they ask me how to get rid of a mortgage? They'll say, well, so how do you get rid of a mortgage because I can't afford my payments? My first question is, do you have cable TV? Well, yeah. I said, okay, then I'm not helping you. That's $100 a month right there. If you
drink
beer and smoke and have cable TV, yeah, there you go. Good answer. Yeah, if you drink and you smoke and you have cable TV and you can't afford your mortgage payments, the problem is not with the mortgage. And the problem is not the bank. And it sure as hell ain't my problem because I don't smoke. I rarely drink, and if I do, it's because I can afford to. And I don't enter into contracts that I cannot honor. Okay, yes, the economy's gone to shit and people are without jobs. Find another one. Create a job. Become a contractor. Shovel people's sidewalks. You know what, when I was 15 years old, I was way younger than that because I was already working at McDonald's when I was 15 years old. When I was 12, I was shoveling people's sidewalks for $10 a pop. I was making $60 an hour on the weekends. I still don't make that. Maybe that's beneath some people to keep their house. I don't know. But anyways, other than that, or there's lots of valid information out there. This is probably going to answer a lot of people's questions. Again, there's a guy in the UK that sent me an email, and this is why I know all people have to do is go back and watch my original first videos from way back in the day. Because this guy watched those videos and walked into a courtroom in the UK and brought up one point that forced the judge to kick the bank out until they produced the information the man had requested. So the information's already in those videos.
Do you got a link for those videos? Are they on YouTube still?
Yeah, they're definitely still on YouTube, definitely. T4TT.info, Lee's site in the UK, they're all on there. I know for sure it was on one of those previous videos because the guy sent me a thank you email saying I watched those videos and I walked into court and stopped the mortgage foreclosure. So.
Thanks. Now, when you were saying that people start going on about, well, it's fiat currency and all that's garbage, like, so there's nothing to that in any way.
No, of course not. Again, gold is fiat currency when you think about it. What is gold? Does it have any real, tangible value other than the fact that people covet it for some reason? Okay, and again, the same thing. At some of the first seminars I first started doing, I'd walk in and I'd say, all right, before we get going here, hands up how many people think that money, how many people know that money is worthless, it's backed by nothing, it's all fiat. And they'd all put up their hands. And I said, okay, everybody's got their hand up right now. Take out your wallet, empty all the cash in it, and send it all up to the front. I want it all because it's worthless, right? Do you think anybody emptied their wallet and passed money up front?
Not one of them.
No, then I guess it's not worthless, is it? Okay? This is another relevant thing people should understand when they're walking into court. Okay? It's one thing to beak off about something. It's another thing to actually, by your actions, prove that that's what you believe. Okay? That's right in the Bible. I know you. I know you by your actions. I don't care what you're saying. I know you by your actions. And if money was really worthless and all these people beaking off about, oh, money's worthless, it's fiat, and I don't know, but maybe proving to people how smart they are because of something they read on the Internet last night. I got a donate button on my website. Send me all that worthless cash. All of it. It's absolutely worthless. It means nothing to you. So send it to me, please. All of it. Okay. Gold
is fiat. I'll take some of that too.
Yeah, you can't eat gold. Okay? It makes awful tasting soup. And 1 kilogram bars make awful weapons when someone is breaking into your house because your aim has to be pretty accurate to hit them on the head as they're coming through the window. What good is gold? Nothing. Other than the fact that some people will take it as payment because they believe it has value. Now, is a cantaloupe fiat currency?
Well, no, it has value.
It has value. I can eat it. Okay. A stack of lumber, does that have value?
It does.
It does, because I can build something with it. Okay. Gold makes pretty little coins and jewelry. Other than that, it's shit. I don't own it. Okay,
so
next question.
So would you think it's more of a better argument with the mortgages and all that, instead of going about how it's fiat currency and that didn't exist, would it be more of an argument with, like, the predatory lending practices and stuff like that, or
okay,
what would be...
Actually, you know what, valid question. So I'm going to give people a good hint here about how important it is with offices and standing. And actually, I do believe I even covered this already on one of the three shows that we've done. This will be number four. I'm pretty sure I told everybody how to get rid of a mortgage already on one of the shows, and it was this simple, okay? Everybody has made the claim that mortgages are fraud because the bank took your note, monetized it, and then loaned you the same money back, okay? That's partially correct, but mostly wrong because people don't understand offices. And now I know for certain I covered this already in one of the previous shows we just recently did. Okay, so this proves how much people... you know what? No, I'm not going to get mad at people. I don't get frustrated because I do understand everybody's ignorant. And we all have to start somewhere. And actually, somebody tried to explain to me how to do something very basic for a website that's being built right now, yesterday. And I was so frustrated after 20 minutes of it, I started laughing, and I said to the guy, now I understand what it's like to hear law for the first time. Because this is so aggravating, and I cannot understand this, this makes me want to start smashing my computer apart. So it's taught me humility to have patience with people when learning law. Okay, so it's only partially correct. For instance, if you owned McDonald's, you were the sole shareholder of McDonald's. Let's not even go there. Pretend you're the president of McDonald's. And you're going to loan Tim Hortons money. So you cut a check to Tim Hortons for $1 million in the office as a representative of McDonald's. And you send it off registered mail to Tim Hortons because let's just pretend that Tim Hortons needs money, which they clearly don't. So they're borrowing $1 million off McDonald's. You then get in your helicopter and you fly over to the adjacent skyscraper. And you run down the flight of stairs, and it just so happens that you're also the president of Tim Hortons. And you open the mail, and there's the check from McDonald's. It's got your signature on it. And so you go to the bank and you cash it. Did you just loan yourself $1 million?
It kind of almost looks that way.
It kind of looks that way, but it's not at all, because number one, you were acting in different capacities in every circumstance. Same man, but the man fills multiple offices. They've got you playing the commerce game to their advantage without you knowing what's going on. They recognize you in the office they want you to be when it's convenient for them. And then they pick the shittiest office for you when it's convenient for them when you don't know what's going on. Okay? In the first transaction in the mortgage, you are the creditor. You sign as the grantor of the mortgage funds. The bank then takes that note as a deposit on their books. So you're a depositor, grantor, depositor of that mortgage. You deposited something of value into the bank. The bank then takes that note and they bugger off and who knows what they do with it. Okay? It's as much relevance to you as it is what they do with your paycheck after you cash it. Okay? Then about 3-4 days later, the bank calls you and says, oh, Mr. So-and-so, we've got the money for your mortgage. Come down and sign up all the papers. We'll give you the mortgage money. Okay? So you go down there, and it's been 4 days, so now you've got a separate transaction going on, and a new contract takes place. And the bank loans you a bunch of credit as a debtor, as the loanee of a mortgage. Okay? Does that not maybe sound like two separate capacities you just acted in?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you just fund your own loan?
I don't know. It looks like it does, but at the same time, like when you were saying with the McDonald's guy paying the Tim Hortons guy and he ends up being him, wouldn't that still be a conflict of interest? Like,
absolutely not. Do you remember something in Canada called the Gummery Inquiry?
No.
Ad scam. They called it ad scam in Quebec. It was all those contracts that were awarded to corporations in Quebec from the federal government with no oversight, with no competition, no bid contracts. And it turns out there was no services even provided for those contracts. Okay? And the people that were involved with the corporations receiving these contracts and checks, not only were they government agents, but they were also the presidents of the corporations receiving the money. So they held the Gummery inquiry to take these people down, and they were all going to go to jail. And Justice Gummery was really mad at these individuals. They were very naughty. And he was questioning these people, and you can download and watch the video, saying, well, do you not find it a conflict of interest that you were the minister, that you were the agent of the government responsible for blah, 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 while at the same time you were also the president of the company receiving that money? And the guy would say, well, of course that's not a conflict of interest. And Justice Gummery would blow up and go, what do you mean that's not a conflict of interest? How is that possibly not a conflict of interest? The guy would say, well, when I was acting in the as an officer of the government, I was an officer of the government. And then when I was fulfilling my duties as the president of that corporation, I was acting in that office. Those are two completely separate capacities. That's why it's not a conflict of interest.
But doesn't one of those offices seem really greedy? You know what I mean? Like, you're cutting
doesn't matter.
But you're cutting these a people, check for yourself. You know what I mean?
But you're not. That's the commerce game. Separate capacities. Well, I'm just a man. I just play roles.
Well, these
now,
people
when I'm
are
playing,
pretty bastards.
Yeah. Guess what? You're playing yourself at chess. Okay, does that mean that one of you doesn't win in the end? There's always a winner. It doesn't matter if you're playing yourself. Okay? So the bank is only acting as an intermediary. Now, it's not the bank's responsibility to tell you that if they collected on that mortgage in full, is that the bank's money?
No.
Who does that money rightfully have to be paid back to?
To you.
As
a loan. Or
no.
as credit.
In what capacity do they owe you the money?
Oh, God, you're losing me. You're going to start yelling.
No, not at all. You loan them the money in one capacity, and then you borrowed it back in another capacity, in a separate transaction. The bank's the middleman. It's like a dark wall so that one can't see the other. The bank's playing as a middleman. Again, all you have to do is ask the bank is who they're collecting on behalf of. Who's the creditor? Could you please identify the grantor of the mortgage? Who supplied you with the credit? It turns out just to be you, but in a separate transaction. They're taking the guy who borrowed the money to court. That's why you can never show up and say, well, I funded that mortgage. Well, that's impossible. If you funded the mortgage, then why would you need the bank in the first place? A better question would be, who's the creditor? Could you please identify the creditor? Because the banks have admitted many, many times they only are acting on power of attorney for the guy that they owe the money to. It turns out to be you, but that's hidden from you. They took your note. They monetized it. That's a deposit. So you have a deposit on the books of the bank that you never go back and collect, ever. Ever. They never see that guy ever again. So they just take it all as abandoned funds many years later.
Can I
There's
ask
several ways to handle a mortgage.
Can I ask for that money?
Well, of course, the guy that loaned the money to the bank can absolutely ask for the money. There's any number of ways to handle it. How about you contact the bank as the grantor of the mortgage? Hello, bank. This is the grantor. You haven't seen me since I came down there and deposited a security into your bank. A, I'm revoking all your power of attorney to collect this debt. B, I'm forgiving the balance of the mortgage due by the loanee. And C, you are hereby commanded to return all funds you have collected to me and close this account and pay me back with interest. The bank can only take what they made in service charges. They cannot keep all the money. It's not theirs. They're holding it in trust, in a separate trust account. So they collect on the one side to pay the other side. All those credits have to be sitting in a trust account somewhere, or they've screwed over the depositor, and the depositor has a claim against the bank. So just ask the bank point blank, hey, if I pay off this mortgage tomorrow, are you going to pay back the guy who loaned me the money in full, or the guy who loaned you the credit in full? Because you were just a middleman acting with power of attorney.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. But that's the commerce game, okay? They developed it knowing that most of us will never figure it out, so they can screw us and rob us blind. It's disgusting. And that's why I'd like to get away with it altogether. But actually, once we learn the rules, is it not easier to keep them honest?
So us basically applying for the mortgage is what the initial grantor is?
Yeah, the application is the granting of credit.
And then because they make you wait and come back at another time, at another transaction, is when the credit comes.
Yeah, however they did that, they take... The application was approved, which means they take the completed... do you ever get the application form back?
I've never bought a house.
Yeah.
I'm
a
renter.
It's got your signature on it. It's got value. It obviously generated the credit itself because it was approved. It's a security that was certified. Yeah, this guy qualifies. Okay, the Bank of Canada is authorized to generate the credit because this guy qualified. Okay, so the credit is generated. Then the bank gets the credit, so it's deposited. So that security is deposited somewhere. It's held in trust. There's all sorts of ways to do it. I think there's like a there's all sorts of theories surrounding the mortgage. More complicated ones, you get into like the if the bank hasn't turned over. See, I actually have had a lengthy conversation with somebody else about this that I think knows more about mortgages than I do. And we came to the conclusion that the bank is actually, or the law firm where you sign that mortgage document, they are supposed to send in that original mortgage document to the Bank of Canada to satisfy the debt. Because the credit is created, and then when the mortgage certificate is lodged back in with them, it actually cancels, zeros out the accounts, and there's no more mortgage. But they never do that. And I think there's people down the States, it was some other different kind of a form, and up here in Canada, I think it's like a T5007 tax form where you report the bank for undeclared revenue because they never sent that mortgage document in. They left it on their books as an asset, so they've got undeclared revenue. And again, banks are only tax-free as long as they exchange and convert currency. But they've done more than that. They converted and exchanged, but then they also kept the original as an asset on their books. Well, that's profit. They profited. That's revenue or whatever it is. So you can actually report them for undeclared income, which sends a tax man after them, and apparently they don't like that a whole lot. So that forces them to actually zero out the accounts. Now, that's not me saying that. That's kind of the product of a conversation I had with somebody that I know I'm authorized to speak about. Going back, I think almost a year now. Again, but just do your own research, right? Don't start looking into this 3 days before the bank's foreclosing.
Yeah.
Because I've had friends lose this argument in court.
That's terrible.
So that was a big rant, but that's my ultimate solution to this because I like to keep things simple. Capacity. Contact the bank and ask them who the grantor of the mortgage is. From what party did the credit come from? Where did it come from?
Nice.
That's one simple question. If they can't even answer that, well, then I guess there's no debt because they're not collecting on behalf of anybody.
Now, have you heard about the mortgages where they're packaging them and selling them as derivatives after securitizing them? And it's a big scam going on now. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, that's mostly in the States. What I understand, that is not what is done in Canada. I've got a friend who's a private mortgage guy. And we got talking about that one day, and he kind of was very adamant about the fact that that does not happen in Canada. And just to prove it, he actually pulled a couple of my private mortgages out of his filing cabinet and said, "I've got yours right here." And he did. He had them right there because he actually is under contract to hold those securities in his office. So that is not done in Canada, so don't be counting on that to get out of your mortgage up here in Canada. And that's why our market is more stable, by the way.
Yeah. I heard that it was in Canada, but it was just about 4 or 5 years behind America, and that's why we're not seeing the big bust-a-rooney.
It could very well be. It could be because he deals in private mortgages instead of bank ones. I'm really not too sure. Again, another reason I don't like the bank argument as well, And I think you're going to lose no matter what argument you make because, well, the courts kind of work for the banks. And any judge in their right mind that wants to go up against the banks, it will be out of a career. They'll be removed from office. They will probably lose their pension. Whether you're right or wrong, you're wrong when it comes to that argument. Simply because I think there's even back in the 80s or the early 90s, there was a decision that was rendered down in South Dakota, I believe, by a judge who made it very well known that one of his last official acts and gifts to the American people before he retired was to rule in favor of a couple that claimed that all mortgages are fraud. It proved that their mortgage is fraud and everybody's mortgage is fraud. There's no such thing as a non-fraudulent mortgage. And this judge ruled in their favor and said, well, of course, I've been waiting for somebody to figure this out. Ruled in their favor and made like actual Superior Court case law that every mortgage is fraudulent. Well, he died within 3 months of that decision. He was murdered. And that case law has been buried and hidden, and almost nobody's ever heard of it. I know somebody that had a copy of it. I think we've been trying to track some down. They got rid of that. And they killed the guy. They killed that judge. And it was an object lesson to other judges. They look, yeah, you know what? You're right. The mortgages are fraud. But if you even think of doing this, you're next. Right, kind of like the theory about how every new president is showing the video of Kennedy getting his head blown off from an angle that no one's ever seen before. You know, with the final words being "Got any questions?" Okay, you may be right, but guess what? You're wrong. You're not going to win that argument because you do not have the power that the bankers have. Sucks to be you. So pay the mortgage.
I'm glad I rent.
And you know what, until it may take us a generation or two to get things back on track, but unfortunately our parents and our parents' parents got involved in the banking scam system. At one point nobody had any such thing as mortgages. We all own the land free and clear. Banks came along and said, hey, how'd you like to pledge that as a security, and we'll loan you a shitload of money and you can live well beyond your means. So guess what, the last two generations lived well beyond their means. And they saddled all that onto us. So if you want to be pissed off, this Father's Day, call your father and your grandfather and say, thank you for plunging us into never-ending debt over the last 60 years of your lives. Thank you. Happy Father's Day. And then get ready for a generation or two of getting out of this shit that we've gotten ourselves into. Greed got us here, okay? Not the bankers. Greed. They didn't force the mortgages on us. So, fraudulent or not, we're in a lot of shit now. So now let's start fixing this stuff. Again, if you have credit cards, well, those, especially non-secured credit cards, get rid of that kind of shit. Live within your means. Save up to buy your house. Use equity lenders if you want to. Or just, geez, I don't know. If anybody else out there has suggestions, please, by all means, give me a call. I've got any number. But if it took us two generations to get into this mess, believe me, it's going to take us two to get out.
I just can't believe just in my lifetime, I remember when my parents moved into our first house in Paris, lovely little town. We got a house that was a single dwelling family. It had a pool. It had all the nice little whistles. And it's like $40,000. And then by the time we even moved out of that house, it's like $150,000. So I could see how back in the day it might have been possible to save up 20 grand and go get yourself a nice house, but now houses are like $250,000 that used to be 60 grand, and I'll sign my life away for that.
Yeah, and does it look like it's getting better, or does it seem like as the mortgage scam goes on every generation, the inflation just gets worse?
Unbelievable. It just
gets worse.
The state and of the whole world.
You know, part of the problem is, too, and this is a great another lesson for trust law for people, is that you notice the elites in the world, the rich people, the real rich people, the people you don't even hear about, they never sell property, ever. It's all held in trust. It's all kept generationally. There's just a new head of the family appointed to be the administrator or the executor of the trust, the family estate, and they all benefit from it. And the lowest class of people, well, not that, I shouldn't say the lowest, I mean the class of people where, like, you know, what used to be the medium income families, the blue collar workers, that have four kids. As soon as the parents die, what happens to the assets?
Kids take it.
They're instantly split up and divided among every friggin' kid there is. They all take whatever they get from selling the mother and father's home. They sell it, take all the money right now, sell off all the assets, get whatever RRSPs or investments were in the family, split it all up, and then they go on a spending spree. And they buy a brand new car that depreciates 80% over the first month they have it. And other stupid shit that no human being actually really needs. Again, why are we in debt?
Greed.
There you go. Because we're stupid, that's why. We're stupid and we're greedy. Two things the rich can count on. The unending stupidity and greed of the masses.
Hey, you should have seen the Black Friday lines. Go on.
There you go. Thank you. If that isn't a testament to our current cultural achievements, then I don't know what is. So again, microcosm problem for mortgages. Yeah, some people can't afford the next couple of payments and actually are in some trouble. Macrocosm, the whole mess that got us here in the first place. So again, where do you want to start?
Unbelievable. Now, we're about 10 minutes away from the end of the second hour, so what did you come up with a topic for next week, or?
Ah, boy, where to start, man?
I heard you say something about maybe a practical one sometime, like a practical application. That'd be pretty interesting.
The thing is that when people understand the offices and the capacities of the person, the criminal matters really kind of start to go away. You start to understand that they can't force you to show up for free at these courtrooms anymore. Have we done a show on that yet, like contracting? Like contracting with the person?
No, I don't think so. We've got...
Let's tentatively call that a topic. Let's call it contracting with the person.
I got someone in the chat room would love to hear about the CRA.
There you go, contracting with the person. That actually falls under that. That's perfect. How to deal with CRA through the person.
Okay. Contracting...
through the person. Let's do that. Instead of contracting with the person, that's actually, it sounds like we're trying to contract with it. Contracting through it, using it as our utility to enter into contracts with people.
I'm writing this all down.
Yeah, because that's practical application and what to do with the person. That's actually an excellent topic. This is why I always leave it for the end of the show. After I get frustrated and rant for an hour, it leads me to what we should probably talk about more next. And you know what? In the meantime, God, on my Facebook page, every other week I'm posting on there anti-consumerism tirades. Stop spending money stupidly. Okay?
But everyone has to go through life looking for useless trinkets to buy.
It's absurd, okay? I've actually got a boycott commercial Christmas thing that I do every year now. I get mad when people actually spend money at a store on me. Make me cookies. I like oatmeal raisin cookies, okay? If somebody makes homemade wine, I love homemade wine. Anything that doesn't generate revenue for the government, number one. And anything that costs you next to nothing to buy. So no massive international corporation is making money off of some useless hunk of shit that I don't want in my house in the first place. Okay? I hate that kind of stuff. It offends me. It's not a gift to me when people pay taxes to buy me a gift. Because I'm trying to fight the tax system. That's not a gift to me. It's almost insulting, actually. Hey, Dean, I did you a gift. I got a big gift for you here. I gave the government $200 in your name. Oh, thanks. Now they can hire another cop to come and kick my teeth in. Okay. Right? I want dinner with my family. I want, and again, food. Okay, you'll notice that most foods you buy, like fresh vegetables and anything that's not in a box, has no taxes attached to it for the most part.
That'd be interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Yes. Okay, so stick to that kind of stuff. And also, because 80% of the food in the grocery store and almost 100% of what comes in a box has either soy or corn in it, which will kill you. So stick to the fresh fruits and vegetables, pay less taxes, quit buying stupid shit, If you want to start effecting real change out there in society, quit feeding the system that's causing all the problems. Stop it. You remember those Susan Powder commercials from like the late 90s? Just stop the madness. I think she was like the Ab Buster or something like that.
Yeah.
Where she's on there screaming, "Stop the madness! Stop the madness!" Well, stop it. Smoking and drinking. Man, I loved it. I did that TNS radio in Ireland. And before the show, in his little preamble there, before he got going on the show, he was talking about donations for TNS radio. And he told the people if they could afford a package of fags that they could afford to donate to the show. And I said, yeah, if that isn't universal truth right there, I don't know what is. Because if you're smoking and you're buying a 24 of beer a week and you're complaining you don't have enough money, I don't feel bad for you.
Well, it does make sense. Like, I hear lots of people going on and on about how broke they are, and then they go to the bar all night, and they smoke all day, and they've got 10 habits, and then they don't understand where all the money went.
And cable TV, and I smoke, and I drink, and I go to the bar every weekend. Well, I 24 a beer is, what, $40 now in Manitoba. Packs of smokes are almost $12 each. Some people smoke a pack a day. You go out for a couple of drinks on the and everybody's, oh, but I have to live. You know, oh, like, you know, oh, if I can't even go out on the weekend and spend $100 at the bar, then what's the point of even living? Well, I don't know. I kind of like my living room setup I got going on here, you know, with my wood stove and my chair, and I like watching the odd movie, and I really don't feel any particular need to go to the bars and be tormented by the absolutely retarded, shitty small talk that people try to engage you in at the bars.
Oh, I know. I
what was on TV earlier that week. Like, it is not entertaining for me. I actually find it infuriating to even be around that.
I have a little business that I started of my own where I do sound and lights, and I do engineering for bands where I'm at the bar. Everybody else is doing the drinking. I'm there working. And I just the ridiculousness that comes out of these people, it makes me understand why I don't drink. It's unbelievable. These people are crazy.
Yeah.
There's we got a couple offers in the chat room. I didn't know if you wanted to get to those before this wraps up.
Sure, might as well. We got a few minutes left here. Instead of listening to us rant, we'll take a few more questions here.
Nice. All right. The 905 number we got. You're on air, Global Fact, with Dean Clifford.
Yeah, great show, guys. Thanks, Dean.
Thanks. I hope I wasn't just rambling too much here, but...
No, it's all good stuff. Sometimes I have to listen to your shows maybe 5 times for it to sink in, but...
Yep, and I can appreciate that, actually. Again, I just got my wake-up call for that the other day because I must look like an absolute moron when just trying to set up a new email server. And I'm sure
we've been programmed for so long,
that.
Right? I mean, that's going to take a lot of work.
But it's not my thing, so yeah, I can understand. I can relate now. Okay.
What I wanted to ask was about Russ Parisky. What did he do wrong, and is it too late to get him out of prison?
No, it's not too late. The only problem is that, and actually I've spoken to both Russ and Elaine about this. I actually spoke to Russ when he was mid-trial. I went out there to offer my services to help him because I don't think he understood the relationship with the person and who you are. This Russ's case is a perfect example of how you can know the Income Tax Act better than even the commissioner of the CRA. That guy can argue the Income Tax Act backwards, forwards, left, right, up and down, and he was correcting. I was there in one of his hearings, and he was correcting one of their special investigators on the stand, and the investigator was saying, well, on this line here where blah, blah, blah on this, and this income thing goes here and everything else, and Russ didn't even need the income tax manual in front of him. He just says, actually, you're wrong. He goes, this particular section, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, this, and blah, 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 blah. And then a definition came out of his mouth that was about 5 sentences long, where even the CRA agents, the Crown and the agent, were looking it up in the book, and they just kind of went, oh, shit, he's right. Okay? He knew that stuff better than them, and he was right. He was factually absolutely correct. What happens when you're right in Caesar's court?
You're wrong.
You're still wrong. Thanks for proving that I'm wrong in my own court. Go to jail. Okay? again, you got to remember with civil rights, we covered this in one of the previous episodes. Civil rights, the government is something that they extend civil rights to their own officers. Okay? Statutes, their officers only have the rights extended to them by the government. They can be taken away or changed at will without notice or explanation.
All
Does
right.
that kind of sound like what happened to Russ?
I don't know enough about the case. I think you would know
yeah.
more about that than
no,
I would.
He argued it better than them. They still found him guilty. He might even win by the time he takes it to the appeals court. But you know what? There, no matter what happens, even if he wins, do you want to know what they've successfully done for 8 years by the time he wins? Wasted his time.
His only
they've
commodity.
Broken him, and they've wasted his time, and that is the entire intent. They want to make it so that nobody in their right mind would spend 8 years fighting this that way.
It's malicious. Anyway, I'll get off the phone.
Absolutely. Yep, but that,
I will
that's
do
the
courses
why.
If you put them up.
Oh, he dropped. Nope. Everybody dropped. All right, I think that we hit the time, and that would be the end of the show. It kicked Dean out of the window already, so thanks everyone tuning in. Tune in next week, Monday, same time, How To with Dean Clifford, Contracting Through the Person, and December 16th, we'll be back with Conscious Living, Foster Gamble, and don't forget Wednesday, True Thought.